A newly formed Syrian opposition group is holding talks with European foreign ministers today, trying to get a European weapons embargo on Syria lifted so that governments can better arm the rebels a year into a civil war that has left more than 36,000 Syrians dead. The new opposition group, the National Coalition for Syrian Revolutionary and Opposition Forces, is headed by a moderate Muslim cleric who's long opposed Syrian President Bashar Assad. His new coalition is being eyed warily by members of an old one, the Syrian National Council, a group of exiles seen by the U.S. as too long removed from Syria. The new opposition coalition was formed at a conference in Doha, Qatar, 2 weeks ago. France has formally recognized it, but Britain and the U.S. are taking a wait-and-see approach. So what do Syrians in this country say? Muna Jundi is Syrian-American. She lives in Flint, Michigan. She's a member of the old coalition, the SNC, but was also there, perhaps the only American, at the birth of the new one, the new National Coalition, and she sees momentum in that group. Her father is a surgeon who recently traveled to opposition strongholds in Syria, and they both join us now from Michigan Radio. Muna Jundi, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And we also want to welcome your dad, Dr. Abdelmajid Jundi, who spent several weeks inside rebel-held areas of Syria conducting emergency surgeries. He joins us as well. Dr. Jundi, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Muna, start with you. You're both supporters of regime change in Syria. What do you think of the thinking that the Syrian National Council, the SNC, which you were also a member of, you know, that the thinking was these are exiles, many who hadn't been in the country for decades, that, you know, there was a concern about the Ahmed Shalabi effect. This is the Iraqi exile who many said gave false information to the Bush administration that led to war in Iraq. You know, there was concern that exiles like yourself who had not been in the country in a while should not be forming this council leading the revolution.
If you look at some of the Syrian numbers, you know, the population inside Syria, anywhere between 21, 23 million, and estimates of the population of Syrians outside Syria is about 16 million. So you have a significant percentage of the Syrian population actually living in exile. Yeah. But in terms of the Shalabi, I think, idea, you know, Shalabi sort of did it the opposite. There was no popular uprising. He created momentum for regime change externally. This is totally not the case. This is an external group of Syrians trying to support a popular uprising that happened organically from within the country.
Yeah, I hear you. And Dr. Jundi, you went back after 42 years. You went back to help during this uprising. What was that like? Because the Syria you saw has been pummeled by this civil war.
I mean, for me, it was great news to get in and see free Syria. But the sad thing, I find everything being destroyed. Infrastructures, school, hospitals, places, even, you know, bakeries. There is nothing really important that was not destroyed.
No.
It is very unfortunate to see a scene like this. I seen everybody I touch lost some loved one. I mean, these are not isolated incidents.
Well,
you talk to anybody, tell you, my father killed here, my brother killed there. Here is my family. We lost all this family in this house.
Did you lose people, by the way, that you'd left behind when you moved?
Myself, my family, we did lose from the beginning. I lost one of my brothers, myself.
Yeah.
And recently, one of my sister-in-law ran out of Syria to go to Libya as a refugee, and she has auto accident and died there, too. This is recently, the last few days.
Well, you don't have to ask. A phrase is coming to me from the Vietnam era, you know, destroying the village to save it. Seeing all this destruction, having lost yourself, do you still think this prolonged, protracted battle is worth it?
This is tell you how much people are eager to see themselves as a human being, and they have the right to say what they want, have honor and dignity to stand up for their rights. Really, I didn't see any people said, I feel sorry, we should not start this. Everybody saying we should have started it long time ago.
You know, Robin, there was we know it as the Syrian revolution as a revolution for dignity. People feel that just being able to criticize the regime and just to get out and, you know, shout anti-regime slogans, that freedom they'd never experienced before, and they say they don't want to go back. So despite all the destruction, in fact, morale is very high.
Well, and we heard early on from many of those in the uprising that it was about, you know, as much as the rest of the Arab Spring was about, it was about demanding equality, demanding freedoms. But we're also hearing about people who stayed behind in Damascus and don't necessarily support the Assad regime, but also find themselves not supporting the uprising. How do you feel about those people? We remember we spoke with journalist Janine DiGiovanni, who wrote extensively about this in the New York Times. She said people in Damascus were afraid that Syria would become another Bosnia, you know, torn apart, you know, breaks between the Alawite Muslim minority that now supports Assad and the Sunni majority, and then you throw in also the Christian minority, that it would be balkanized. They're afraid of that. They're also, many of them, as westernized as you are. You know, they've gone to school outside of the capital, and they're afraid that this is not a secular uprising, that this is about bringing the country into some sort of caliphate and losing the freedoms that they feel they already have.
Well, my experience, rich people who want to sip their coffee and tea and have an agent from this government to serve them, because they are rich and they pay them dues. You know, there is dues you pay for this government agent, security agent. You can live there, but you don't have dignity. You cannot do things on your own. If you want a passport, if you want ID, you have to go to one of them. Please help me out and get it for me. Here is how much I pay you for it. I mean, these are the people she's talking about.
Well, to be fair, Janine DiGiovanni did meet some elites who were, you know, having their toenails done while the country was falling apart around them. But she also met some people who genuinely, they don't like Assad, but they also don't think this is the time for change. And they worry about, you know, there has been evidence of some al-Qaeda involvement in the uprising. There was a video of fighters, you know, declaring their intention to create an Islamic State. They worry about that. Muna, do you have any sympathy with those concerns?
Yeah, I think that those are legitimate concerns. And there is a percentage. It's still a low percentage, but it is a percentage nonetheless that is getting its funding from those types of sources. And we've been advocating to our government, listen, you know that they're going to get the arms. You know that they're going to continue on this path. Why don't we be the ones to help train, direct, and make this happen quickly?
Well, hold that thought, because we're coming up on a break. That's Juna Mundi, Muna Jundi, a Syrian-American immigration lawyer in Flint, Michigan. Her father, Dr. Abdelmajid Jundi, recently went back to help the opposition. More with them and Syria expert Josh Landis in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back. We're talking about Syria as that country's civil war rages on with Muna Jundi, a Syrian-American immigration lawyer in Michigan, a member of an old exile opposition group who recently participated in the creation of a new group. Her father, Abdelmajid Jundi, is a surgeon who recently went back to Syria to help the opposition. And Muna, you were just telling us there's a legitimate concern about al-Qaeda taking root in Syria, and you think the U.S. can stop that by choosing which rebel groups to work with. Pick up there.
Exactly. Let's vet. And, you know, I'm not saying going in blindly. Let's vet who these fighters are, find the ones that we can work with, and let's do this and end this quickly, because the longer this goes on, the more those extreme elements are going to continue to grow. Syrians don't want that in Syria. So this is something that the Syrian people and the Americans, we can agree on.
Well, but as you know, Muna, this is a country, the U.S., that's war weary. People may not be interested in further involvement with Syria.
I tell you, we are absolutely not advocating for one American boot to be on the ground. What we are asking for is with the international community to provide the weaponry that's needed, surface-to-air missiles and anti-tank artillery to help tip the scales in favor of the revolution. I mean, if you can imagine right now, Robin, the Free Syrian Army, according to U.S. intelligence, Free Syrian Army is in control of about 30% to 40% of the country. Now, obviously, that's land control, because air, you know, the regime still is dominant in the air. They're not able to fight against
can
that.
Can I say something? At least 70% is in the hand of the revolutionary. I will not say these are rebels. These are people who are asking for their rights.
Well, Dr. Jandia, just one last question for you. What is your dream? What is your hope? Would you go back?
I go back to help. I will help treating the injured. I will help the needy who cannot pay anybody. That's my goal there.
Yeah. Abdelmajid Jandi, a Syrian and American citizen who's a surgeon, and recently we went back to Syria to help during the opposition. Muna Jandi, a Syrian-American immigration lawyer in Flint, Michigan, also part of the opposition in exile, you'd have to say. Muna, Dr. Jandi, thank you so much, both of you.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay, let's bring in Syria expert Joshua Landis, who teaches at the University of Oklahoma and joins us from KGOU in Norman. And Professor Landis, Josh, earlier we mentioned the Ahmed Chalabi effect. This is the Iraqi exile who ginned up war with Iraq. There's now a new opposition group in Syria, as we also mentioned. Is there concern that this new group of Syrian exiles might be as out of touch as the last one?
Well, clearly the administration has a number of problems. And the problem is nobody in Syria today has a big social base in the country. All of the Western powers have tried to put a lot of pressure on the Syrian exile communities to come together and form one leadership that they can get behind. So this is a big triumph, the national council that's been put together, the national coalition. The problem will be whether these civilian exiles can in any way take control of the military war that's going on the ground. There are dozens of militias, some of them quite big and powerful. And it's not clear that they're going to listen to these foreigners or these people in exile and the civilians.
Well, the new coalition's leader, Moaz al-Khatib, opposes foreign military intervention as well. He wants, as Muna Jundi just said, he wants Syrians to topple Assad. They just need a little something to tip the scale. Do you think that's possible?
Well, clearly, you know, I think the United States is now reconsidering what it should be. France said that it wants to recognize this government. Turkey has recognized this government, this new national coalition that's come together as the legitimate government of Syria. You know, if this coalition can hold together, the next step will be to legitimize it the way the Libyan government in exile was legitimized. Then they'll take it to the UN, try to get the UN to recognize it. Then they can give money to it officially and potentially arm it legally. The problem today is that China and Russia veto any efforts like that. But it's possible that if they get together a coalition, Russia and China will be loath to veto it. So that's the effort. The question, though, is arms. And that's what the Syrian opposition wants today.
Because right now there's a sanction against any country giving arms to Syria, presumably, you know, that covers the rebels as well and people in these groups.
Well, there are plenty of arms getting in.
Sure.
They're not high-grade arms. They're not ground-to-air missiles, anti-tank missiles that are sophisticated.
Right. So the request is that the U.S. allow these bigger arms to go to Syria. Of course, you know, the U.S. is concerned about exactly who they're going to go to, that when the dust settles, this will not be a secular overthrow of the regime. It'll be a more fundamentalist one, and they'll lose some of their rights.
Well, that, you know, that we don't really know where Syria will go. There are so many divisions within the country. You know, this is what the U.S. administration and many Europeans are worried about. If you give arms, who will end up getting them? There's a big weapons of mass destruction, big chemical weapons deposits in Syria that the Assad regime has built up over the years. And there's great worry about what will happen to all that.
Let's address that. The Lebanese-based but Syrian-backed militant group Hezbollah has set up training camps next to the sites where the weapons are held, that, you know, maybe sworn to protect them. So how much is that factoring into this decision?
Well, I think it's a worry. And I think, you know, Israel's concerned what will happen once the regime collapses. Israel says they want the regime to go. But I think many people are also worried about what comes next. And that's why there's this big rush to try to organize the Syrian opposition and an attempt to get pro-American, secular people like the Jundis in leadership positions so that hopefully they can take charge of what's happening on the ground. Many people are skeptical, and this could turn into quite a protracted battle, not only against the Assad regime, but ultimately between different factions within Syria.
That's Professor Josh Landis, Syria expert at the University of Oklahoma. Josh, thanks so much as always.
It's a pleasure speaking with you.
So, what are your thoughts? What's the way out for Syria? How involved should the U.S. be? And while we're on the topic, do you think Egypt can broker a ceasefire in the Middle East? That was our top story today. Let us know your thoughts. hereandnow.org at facebook.com/hereandnowradio. We'd always love to hear from you. Still ahead, those quickie two-week $400 college courses enabling especially athletes to stay in school. We'll hear more about that. The latest news is next, though, here and now.